Okay, let's make sure you're in fellowship and continue on here. Dealing now with Roman numeral 7, the establishment chain of command. Situation that we have to deal with out there in the world with the authorities and the physical realm that we may or may not like. They may or may not be righteous, but they're still here at God's will, and that has to be understood. A, like the spiritual chain of command, believers, or the royal chain of command, rather, believers are to recognize that authorities and the establishment chain of command exist as a part of the directive will of God. Our famous verse in Romans 13:1, all authority exists, comes from God. B, God established the principle of nationalism, with each nation having its own independent government on behalf of positive volition. Acts 17. If people ever did a study, a legitimate biblical study of nationalism, they would understand that God recognized that internationalism tends to mitigate against positive volition. And that in an international setting, one of the things we're going to see as we get more into the book of Revelation, in fact, is that the international setup as it exists now and will continue to intensify into that period is going to ultimately become the bane of believers. That positive volition is going to suffer and suffer mightily under this. Those 144,000 Jews, to what extent they'll suffer, we don't know. They'll surely be the objects of persecution, but they are protected. But not everyone is going to have that benefit. One of the things that's real clear is that a lot of people die during that final 3.5 years. A lot of believers are persecuted. We know that the two witnesses themselves will be persecuted during the first 3.5. Then, obviously, they're going to suffer to physical death, we know, and then they will be resuscitated and raised and taken to the third heaven. But the attacks on believers are going to become more and more vicious. As we will see, beheading, it seems to be, from what we can tell in the scripture, the method of choice, because that's one of the things we'll see, those that were beheaded for the word of God. And so the reality is that internationalism is a dangerous thing, and it's promoted, of course, today all over the world, all over the media, as being something wonderful. And God established just the opposite, Acts 17:26, and that he made from one every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation, that they should seek God. If perhaps they might find, might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. And so the whole point of all of this is that nationalism was established for seekers, because it is an environment in which is most conducive for positive volition both to exist and to function. See, the divine this divine institution, number four, and authorities that exist on this account are to be obeyed at all times, even if their laws and policies are unjust. Romans 13:2. We live, for instance, for all intents and purposes, in a socialistic society now. Socialism has been foisted on the American public for many, many years, beginning back with the Social Security system and other incidents that continue to exist. And there are more people now on the government payroll than there ever have been, and that's going to continue to intensify and grow. And socialism is a large measure, just a measure of a redistribution of wealth, a system for redistributing wealth, and this is done through a system of unjust, unfair, and oppressive taxation. Now, our government likes to hide the fact that it's taxing its citizens into non-existence, and so they don't call them taxes, because taxes are not the politically correct way to call taxes. We call them fees, impact fees. There are licenses you have to have if you want to cut down a tree on your own property. Why do you need the government's approval? The answer is, according to the Bible, you don't. That's your property. But the reality is, we live in a culture that says if you want to cut down a tree on your own property, you got to go pay a tax. Now, they don't call it a tax. They call it a license or a fee or whatever they call it. But it's a tax. It's just another tax on the populace. And as near as we can tell, the fact is we cannot tell the impact of taxes at all on what we pay. Now, we do know that starting out, right off the top, before anything happens, between you and your employer, you're taxed 15.65% just for Social Security and all of that. And then you pay whatever federal tax rate you pay. I assume most of us here do okay, so we're probably in the 15% bracket. So there's 30% of your money right off the top before you start. And then your after-tax dollars are taxed again. They're taxed 7% local sales tax. They're taxed at the gas pump to the tune of about 40 cents a gallon or so, 45. I don't know exactly what it is here now, but that's pretty close, I think. Then you're taxed on top of your taxed money. And so you're taxed two times, three times, four times, and the taxes just keep mounting up. Then you pay taxes for owning your property. Then, of course, they have other systems set up, which we won't get into. Let's just stick with the tax things. Then there's the hidden taxes that we don't see. Those are the things that we actually can see and say, well, okay, if I got to get a permit, it's a tax. If I'm going to build a house in Sarasota County, it's going to be taxed, and all of that. Those are the things we can see. What about the taxes we can't see? The taxes we can't see, the invisible taxes, I like to call them, are passed on to us by corporate America because they're taxed. And they're not paying these taxes. They're passing it on to their constituents, the people that that do business with them. And so if the corporation is taxed, they just pass that tax on to the consumer in the form of higher prices. And so realistically, before you even get started, your 50% of your income has gone to taxes, whether you know it or not. You're paying at least that much in taxes just to live. And the reality is with the hidden taxes, it could be as high as 70 or 80%. And we laugh at Canadians because they have socialized medicine. And we think that's funny because they pay like 80 or 90% in taxes. But yet your average American has no clue he's paying 70 to 80% in taxes and doesn't even know it. And so, obviously, they've done a good job of keeping this in the dark. So, the fact is, of course, this is all unjust. This is highly unjust. And they want a series of extra taxes. If you make above a certain amount, then you should be taxed more. In other words, the more you prosper, the more the government should prosper. Well, guess what? That's not biblical. The reality is there ought to be a flat tax. And there shouldn't be all these hidden taxes. But that's not going to change. And so the American people are enslaved to the government without even knowing it. And then, of course, you get into the system of the federal bank and all that's going on there, and they have very little clue as to what's happening with their money or why. As they manipulate inflation, as they manipulate interest rates to serve their purposes. So Romans 13:2, therefore now, and by the way, our founding fathers fought wars over this stuff. Fact is today, the American people don't have a spine. They wouldn't fight a war over anything. They can tax us into non-existence, and we don't care. As long as we can watch Friends on Thursday night, we're fine. I mean, we've just got to have certain things that we can live with. And so the reality is most people will put up with this. But our founding fathers fought wars over oppressive taxation and all of that. And actually, of course, seceded from the government. For both religious and political reasons, people want to make it, they only came over here for religious freedom. That wasn't the only reason they came. They also came to escape the oppressive system of taxation, which the king continued to try to foist upon them anyway, until we had something I like to call the Boston Tea Party, when we said enough's enough. And see, now, if enough Americans would wake up, but see, Americans aren't going to wake up. They're going to go out, they're going to ramrod, they're going to get together, and they're either going to vote for Bush or Kerry. And no matter who they vote for, they're going to be convinced that they're changing the country for the better. And guess what? They're the same guy. You're not changing anything. And it'll be better or worse depending upon what the powers that be say. So again, he who resists authority, we have to say, all right, look, given all this dire set of circumstances, and in my opinion, it's pretty dire when you're paying that kind of money just in taxes, you may want to resist this. And people have tried this. I mean, there was, if you remember, the tax revolts of like the 60s and 70s where people convinced people you don't have to pay tax. By the way, the federal income tax is illegal in and of itself. And by the way, income, wages are not income. There is a distinction. But when you get your tax return, it's going to say wages. It doesn't say income, it says wages. Although it's called an income tax. See, wages are what you bring in. Income's what you got left after you pay all your bills. Now, I don't mind paying income tax if I can deduct, you know, my water bill off and my electric bill and all the taxes. Oh, and don't forget about the 10 or 12 or 15% tax you're paying on your phone. Now, these taxes are out there all the time. They're all over the place. You're taxed on everything. If they could figure out a way to tax you to breathe, they would. Every breath you take, I'll be watching you. That's their new song. And I'm going to be taxing you, too. You breathed exactly 112,000 times today. Now, we're going to charge you for the oxygen you took in, but we're going to have an impact fee for the CO2 you let out. Don't get me started. Well, the challenge is not to resist authority when it's this oppressive and it's this. And the reality is, where else would you rather live in the world? As bad as it may be from certain perspectives, where else do you want to live? Afghanistan? I'll pass. India? No, thanks. China? No. France? You want to live over there with them snooty frogs? That's your business. No, I don't want to live there either. There probably isn't any place you're going to go that it's going to be any better. That's the sad reality. But this is the national and international spiral of destruction we're sitting here watching and we're a part of, unfortunately. So again, he who resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God. So we have to pay our taxes. And you best just get in fellowship about it and pay him with a good attitude. Because you're going to have to do this anyway. It's undeserved suffering. Suck it up, apply the doctrine, and go on. That's all you can do. And they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. Yes, those people that went on the tax revolt and decided not to pay found out the IRS meant business. And so they said, how would you like a small time in jail to reconsider your actions? And most of them don't really want to go to jail. Now, we allow for civil disobedience, and I will tell you, if you think taxation is wrong, don't pay your taxes. But also, I will tell you, you better be prepared for the consequences because they're not going to take this lightly. They can't let the American people begin to think for themselves again. That would be way too dangerous. And so they've got to quash anything that smacks of attacking the public trough where they throw all of our dollars and where the little piggies feed. They can't have that trough messed with. And this is, but again, this is nothing new under the sun. If you remember when we studied Acts, this was just the way it was at the Jerusalem situation with the temple. And these people out there like Stephen teaching, you don't have to worship God in Jerusalem. What? That was what got Stephen killed, was Stephen basically was an attack on the public trough. All that money that funneled into Jerusalem, and particularly to the leadership, the Jewish leadership, was in danger. And they said, we can't have people out there telling people this kind of stuff. This is a cash cow, man. And so they killed him. And they killed him because he meddled with their taxes, in effect. And, they're serious, and the leadership in the world is serious about this stuff, trust me. They want to live off of everybody for free. So they vote themselves elaborate retirement accounts. They don't pay health insurance. They get free haircuts. You know, my money would go a lot further if I got free health insurance and free haircuts and didn't have to worry about a lot of the things they have to. If I didn't have to pay Social Security, I'd have an extra 7.65% in my pocket every month. So, again, they don't want you meddling with this stuff, so be aware, if you don't pay your taxes, you're probably going to come under their wrath. And 1 Peter 2:13-14, which again, all this just suggests that we have to submit ourselves to this authority. We may recognize from a doctrinal perspective it's unfair, it's wrong, it's unjust. Okay, does that let you off the hook? The answer is no. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as one in authority, or to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who are doing right. Civil disobedience towards legal authority is acceptable only in rare, extreme cases. when the civil authority oversteps the boundaries of their authority. See, anytime any authority oversteps the boundaries of their authority, whether it's the pastor, whether it's the civil authorities, whether it's a husband or a father, you have the right to disobey. You have that God-given right. And but also, be aware, there are repercussions when you do that. When the civil authority oversteps the boundaries of their authority and encroach into the moral realm. They cannot make moral laws, although they constantly are trying to. Now we can't say under God. We're trying to figure out whether or not, and now we got this new law, the law of the death of the unborn. The death of the unborn. Well, by definition, aren't they unborn? How could they die? And so, whatever the purpose of all of this is, it's just another nonsensical law to make more Americans criminals. And the reality is the Bible addressed this. If the two men were fighting and a woman was pregnant and she miscarried because of that, he paid a penalty. He wasn't charged with murder. He paid a penalty. And for their pain and suffering and all of that, and dealt with it, and then they moved on. Also, the Lacey-Peterson Law, that's what it's called. So now we've got the, we are such a culture of victims. We've got victims' rights for people that aren't even alive. I'm going to start advocating a dead victims' rights law. Dead victims should have rights too. If unborn victims have rights, so should dead victims. And how do you determine who's a victim? And so we want to, and they're trying to figure out, should we pass a law so people can't sue McDonald's because they got fat from eating too many French fries? We have to think about this. Yeah, our culture is pretty sick. Why are we thinking about this? We've already proven you can take a perfectly normal legal product like cigarettes and turn it, criminalize it, and get people to make millions of dollars off of it. And who benefits from all this? The lawyers. Guess who makes the laws? And who influences all this? The lawyers. And the political action committees and all these various other things. There's this one guy, there's a story in the paper today. This guy is on a political action committee. He's a, what do they call him? The guys that, escapes me now, but he's one of those guys that goes, a lobbyist. He's a lobbyist for the tobacco companies, but he's terrified of cigarettes. Get another job. No, because the money's right. Hey, my morals can go down the drain if the money's right. That's what we call prostitutes and whores. Morals are out the drain if the money's right. You remember that movie with Robert Redford? I sleep with your wife for $1 million. Well, normally I have a lot of high morals. $1 million? I mean, come on. Let's not, honey. I have a little surprise for you. We're going to take a great vacation. Well, this is the thing. You're against cigarettes, you hate tobacco, you don't want your kids smoking, and you work as a lobbyist for a tobacco company. Okay. All right, well, Daniel 6, 1, state interference here with doctrine or spiritual function. Daniel was told, of course, that he couldn't pray. This was set up by some people that were out to get him. And then Acts 5:29 dealt with where the apostles were told they couldn't teach doctrine anymore. Couldn't teach any more things in the name of Jesus. Well, at that point, the line is drawn in the sand. And I have to decide what I'm going to do then. And Peter and them answered with their famous answer, we must obey God rather than men. In the terms of Cartman, I'm going home. We're going to do what we think is right, and we don't care what you think. Do what you want. And then this is the irony, of course, now, verse 28. We still have this verse going on today. We gave you strict orders not to continue teaching in this name. And behold, you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching. Well, I would say they've been successful then. And you intend to bring this man's blood on us. It's that dirty Mel Gibson. He's making the Jews responsible for the death of Jesus. That dirty so-and-so. Well, the Jew, Peter, he did it. Peter did it better than Mel Gibson did. Verse 30, the God of our fathers raised up Jesus, whom you had put to death by hanging him on a cross. You had put to death. And so we know Jesus told Pilate, the one who delivered me up has the greater guilt here than you. Two, stage enforced idolatry. That was Daniel 3, where when they played the music, you had to bow down to the statue. This, of course, is very much, of course, a type of what's going to happen in Daniel's 70th week. Bow down to the statue, and then you have those three asbestos Jews. They wouldn't bend, they wouldn't bow, and they wouldn't burn. No matter what you did to them, they said no. And then three, state-sanctioned criminal activity. That's Exodus 1, 15 through 22, where the midwives were commanded to kill all the male children. Now see, once the baby's born, you can't kill them. They're protected by God's law, by the moral law of the universe. Now, before that, they don't have life. They're physically living off the mother, but they don't have a soul. The soul is imputed at the point of that first breath. God breathes into their nostrils the breath of life. From that point on, you can't kill them, or at least you're not supposed to. And say state-sanctioned criminal activity where the state says you've got to do something that's morally wrong, kill, steal, etc. Just plug in. But look at this. Now, the Bible covers the Old Testament, at any rate, from the time of Genesis. Now, Moses wrote about circa 1500 B.C. or so. But from the time of Genesis, goes back to about 4000 B.C. and goes up to about 400 B.C. And in that time, we've got, what, three examples of this? I mean, I'm not saying it never happened again. But even by the biblical standard, one would have to say, this is rare. This is pretty rare. Now, this same thing will be happening into, Daniel's 70th week, though, where state-enforced idolatry will become the law, or you can't buy or sell. Well, believers are to be submissive to other authority structures that exist as a part of society with which they have affiliations or dealings. That's the First Peter. We've read that one, 2:13. This would include state, county, and city authorities. Two, schools and academic institutions. You're not free to just disrupt, all that if you don't happen to agree with what they're doing. I don't agree with what the professor's teaching, so I've got the right to disrupt class. No, you don't. Three, military leadership where applicable. And this gets into obeying the military under a particular deal. Should martial law be enforced? It will at some point. I figured it was coming after September 11th, frankly. I'm a little surprised they're dragging their feet on this one. But it's not a problem for them to institute it whenever they want, trust me. We're afraid they'll sabotage the elections. God only hopes that they can sabotage the elections. Then we wouldn't have Bush or Kerry. That'd be great. But who would we have? Let's bring Clinton back. He was fun. If nothing else, he was fun. I mean, he didn't pretend to be a great leader or anything. Whereas these other guys, they pretend they're great leaders. They flip-flop on everything. I had this guy tell me this week, that guy, that Cheney guy or whoever it was, the CIA guy, he's flip-flopped on his story. I said, really? You don't listen to Bush talk? Flip-flop? This guy's like a fish out of water. I mean, it's just every time, every other thing. Well, if believers are commanded to pray for those in authority for the express purpose of maintaining an environment that is conducive to our Christian life. 1 Timothy 2, 1 and 2. And this ought to be a part of your prayer list for the... And I'll tell you who you really should pray for in the establishment chain of command is that local cop out there that's keeping the criminals away from your front door. The guy that puts his life on the line every day when he goes to work down there as he cruises through Newtown, hoping he's not shot by a crack whore or somebody else. The guy who's keeping the criminal away from your house, that's the guy, in my opinion, that really needs a lot of prayer. They go out and, cops die every day in the line of duty. And sometimes not just because of criminals. I mean, you'll see these shows on TV where highway patrolmen pull somebody over and somebody comes along and runs him over on the interstate. Just because you've got stupid people, apparently. It's not just the criminals we've got to watch out for. So these guys are out there fighting for law and order, we might say. But you pray for those in positions of authority, and your prayer should be very specific, as in 1 Timothy here. I urge that entreaties, prayers, petitions, and thanksgivings be made on behalf of all men, for kings and all who are in authority. And what are we to pray for? In order that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity. Now, the reality is, of course, while we're being taxed into non-existence, this doesn't affect you at a certain level in terms of your pursuit of doctrine. You still can pursue Bible doctrine in an environment of freedom. And for that, we should be grateful. Because people, unfortunately, have shed their blood and given their lives in order for us to enjoy the freedom we have. Very often, of course, as we know, sacrificed by our own government for their own ends. But the fact is, many good men thought they were at least doing the right thing and went to fight against what they perceived to be tyranny and all of these sorts of things. And so, while we've never been personally invaded, no one's ever breached the shores of this country other than the Mexicans and the Canadians. Mm-hmm. And they're taking us by storm. The illegals funnel up through Mexico from who knows where, and Bush will make them all legal just in time for the election. You want to vote for me? Sure, I made you a legal citizen while you're here. Well, there's not much politics involved in that. So pray that we can maintain, an environment where we can pursue doctrine, where we can apply, where we can live in peace. And if your tax rate's too high, well, I'm sorry for that, but that's just the way life is. And we still are able to do what we're doing, produce divine good, and all of that. 8, the business realm is also a part of society in the chain of command, and the Word of God provides very specific commands about that realm as seen in the master-slave relationship. Ephesians 6, 5 through 9. Slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh. And in phrasing this way, Paul is very subtly saying, now I know that your spiritual master is God, but you've got fleshly masters too that you have to deal with. Now, with fear and trembling, in sincerity of your heart as to Christ, not by way of eye service as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. See, the heart is the current you. At every given point in time, like when you go to work today or tomorrow, whenever you go to work, if you can't throw your heart into it, you don't need to do it. You're wasting your time. This is how you are to do your work, all out. This is true of everybody, from the pastor right on down. This is what one of the things like when the pastor said, told the pastor, he's not to do it grudgingly, but to do it willingly. And you're to do your job willingly too, recognizing that you work for Jesus Christ and that He will ultimately reward you. Whatever you get in this life, and by the way, you shouldn't use all that just to say, well, see, it doesn't matter if I'm a good or bad employee, because it does matter. You work for Christ, well, my boss is, I'm never going to get a raise, blah, blah, blah. God can prosper you as He sees fit. You just wait and do your niche and humble yourself under His hand. And then you see how it goes. Slaves of Christ doing the will of God from the heart. That's the real you, the current you right now. You as you exist at this second. With good will render service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. That's the beauty of it. From the highest ranks of society to the lowest, God treats all people the same if they do their job right. Some slave out there in the Roman Empire doing his job right as a Christian is the kind of person, one, Paul exhorted people to be, and two, is up for a lot of reward. You say, well, his job was to be there and just wash people's feet when they came in. That's right. There were slaves that were devoted just to that. And that was his job. Did he do it? Did he do it right? Did he do it with a good heart? When people walked away, did they say, man, that's the cleanest my feet have ever been? Or did they say, you filthy slave, you didn't even try? You know? So you... Again, it doesn't matter what your job is. There's no work that isn't honorable. I know people make fun of people that work in the fast food industry or that collect trash for a living. Well, I'm damn glad they're out there. All work is honorable work. There isn't any work that isn't honorable. If it's done right, done in fellowship, work is honorable in and of itself. And so your job may not be glorious. Well, I've got this kind of funky job. My job isn't glorious. I sit in a little construction trailer that is not as big as this room. And I sit there and I deal with what I deal with. It's not glorious, trust me. I don't get up tomorrow and think, oh, goody, goody. I get to go to work again today. I get to sit in that little funky trailer. Well, at least it's air conditioned. It may be a funky little trailer, and it is a funky little trailer. It's like, you know, it's a little construction trailer, probably 30, 40 years old, and set up on some blocks and some cinder blocks. And but I go out there, and if I do my job right, and I'm in fellowship, I take the rent. You know, certain things are not in my job description. This woman came in the other day. They're getting thrown out of the park. She's upset, crying. I know you can do something. You've got a good heart. I'm like, it's not, I have no control over it. There's nothing I can do. My job is to sit here and collect rent and to do whatever my boss tells me to do. And if the boss says to throw you out of the park, you're out of the park. It's not my call. See ya. And, you know, and you feel bad for people. I got a family. My dad died. Yeah, okay, I died. Okay, what do you want me to do? I can't do anything about it. I got to do my job as unto the Lord. And that doesn't mean helping you necessarily. It means doing what my boss says. Now, do I think my boss is wrong from time to time? Yes. Do I think he's hard-hearted? Yes. But you know what? It's easy to criticize the guy in charge when you don't have the responsibility, isn't it? Everybody's a good Monday morning quarterback. It's in the heat of the game when the decisions are made that you discern, you determine if you're any good or not. So, you know, he's done his job for 15 years. Who cares what I think? Do you really care what your employees think if you've done your job this long and you know what you're doing? And, you know, they've paid him, you know, 15 years, pretty good pay for what he does. So I got to assume they're happy with him. But see, people figure out that, you know, well, I'm here to evaluate the boss. No, you're not. You're here to do your job as unto the Lord and let the chips fall where they may. If you get blessed, you know, this year I got a lot of blessings. Last couple of years I hadn't gotten a raise at all. This year I got a raise and an extra week of vacation. Whoopee! So, but guess what? You take what you get, and you get what you get. So, you know, since they didn't give me a raise, you know, I've been stealing like 13 cents a day. I have a plan. No, I haven't stolen any money. I don't even steal paper clips. Good grief. If you can't afford to buy your own paper clips, why take them home from work? You need paper clips that bad? Or pencils or whatever, you know, people tend to do when they're on the job. Oh, it's just for the business. And, you know, they don't care if we have it. Yeah, I saw that, you know, when they hired you. They said, feel free to take anything you like. You know, but people don't tend to take the copier and walk out with that under their arm, do they? You know, no. Okay, and also Colossians, that passage says the same thing there. Hey, while the institution of slavery does not exist theoretically, I should have double underlined and bolded that, because it's only theoretic that it doesn't exist in our society, because it does exist. These principles are immediately applicable to the employer-employee relationship. B, the prime directive is explicit obedience. Colossians 3:22, that is the obey your masters. It doesn't say if you think they're right. It doesn't qualify it. It just says slaves, in all things obey those who are your masters on the earth. Pardon me. It's like the commands to the wives. Wives, obey your own husbands in all things. Same thing here. See, and women probably say, see, that isn't fair. You men don't know what it's like. Oh, yes, we do. We just get it at a different level. Authority exists everywhere. We have to be obedient. And you say, well, I don't have a boss. I'm self-employed. Well, then you got 50 bosses if you're self-employed. You're lucky. You got 50 bosses. I only have one. So that means when you go out and you're doing your job and you're self-employed, well, whatever they say, they're the boss. And last time I checked, the customer was always right. Not in our society, but I mean in real life, they're always right. Supposed to be. See, the fact that your idea about the matter at hand may be better is not an issue. You are not to argue with your boss. Titus 2:9. And we've all probably failed in these areas from time to time. But again, these principles are true. Whether we failed in them or not doesn't matter. We still have to advocate the truth. urge bond slaves to be subject, urge bond slaves to be subject to their own masters in all respects, to be well-pleasing, not argumentative. D, you are not to appropriate company property for your own use. In other words, don't steal. Titus 2:10. And not pilfering, but showing all good faithfulness. There, I think the word faith in this context has more of the nuance of faithfulness, that you're a faithful employee, demonstrating that you're a faithful employee. And you say, well, people, they don't notice. They don't care. You're not doing it for people. You're doing it for the Lord in your own conscience. E, don't engage in eye servants, which is analogous to only working diligently when you are being observed. That's Ephesians 6:6, not with eye service. And we've all seen people like that, haven't we? They go to work, and while the boss is there, they're fine. And when the boss is gone, well, they go back in the back and sit down and have a smoke. Well, that's not God's will. The smoking thing's all right. You can do that. But just not while you're on the job. Although now you're a criminal if you smoke, so you can't even do that. I don't want you smoking anywhere. It's against God's will, apparently, in America. So don't engage in eye service. Again, that is not by way of eye service. That is just watching people when you're being, or working only when you're being watched. If you can't do your job all the time the same way, get another job. Get something you like. There's something to be said for doing work that you like doing. And God will provide you with a job, a good job. And you just have to be open to it, pray about it. See, you got a job and it interferes with Bible class. Don't immediately just quit your job and assume, well, I'll just quit my job. God will take care of me. Yeah, he may take care of it by giving you a good swift kick in the rear. Pray about it. Stop. Relax. Think. Okay, all right, God, what do you want here? Humble yourself and relax and trust God and let him move you when he sees fit. And God will take care of your niche for you. It isn't as though I love you more than God loves you. God loves you. You know, I want to see you taken care of. Surely he loves you more than I do. And so he'll take care of people and provide for them. You just got to be willing to do, well, the only job I could get was at McDonald's. Fine, work at McDonald's. Do what you have to do. And, well, my job doesn't pay me enough. Fine, get another one. I see I have an answer for everything. Get another one. Get two. Get three if you have to. They used to have these skits on In Living Color, and they were funny as heck, these Jamaican people. Well, we got lots of jobs. And they would work like 50 jobs, you know. There's this guy out there that works at the park now where I'm at. He does part-time work. He gets up and comes to work there at 8 o'clock in the morning, leaves home, I guess, about 7:30, comes to work there, works till 12:30, goes home and has lunch, drives down to Venice to work at PGT, the glass place down there. Does really rigorous hard work all day, gets off at, I think he works from 2 to 10. He works till 12:30 there, goes home, has lunch, heads to Venice, works till 10 o'clock at night, gets home at 10:45, and never sees his wife and kids, but they live in a nice house. Well, okay, see, this guy's got his priorities a little bit fouled up. He's confused about a lot of things. But if you have to work that many hours, and if it's God's will for you, fine. But just so you can have a big house, that's not God's will. That's, you learn to be happy with a little less. To have to work those kind of hours to make ends meet, and I think his wife works in the medical profession, so she gets paid pretty well, I think. And live within your means, man. But the point is, if you have to work extra hours, well, fine, do it. Do what you have to do. And I hear it too many times out of believers. My niche is too hard. It's impossible. No, it's not. Oh, yes, God hates you. You're the only one. He gave you an impossible niche, but all the rest of us, we just sit around and eat bonbons and watch TV. No, that's not the way it works. I think I know most of the people here pretty well, and most of you work pretty damn hard for what you have. And so I never have begrudged anybody anything they have. Even if they just get it through grace, I still don't begrudge it to them. But most people work really hard for what they get. Well, F, you are always to treat your boss or bosses with courteous respect, 1 Peter 2:18. And you're going to find out, hey, guess what? Oh, do you ever have a bad day? You know, do you ever just think, well, I'm having a bad day? Do you think your boss ever has a bad day? You know, cut him some slack when he's having a bad day. When he does stuff that's out of character, and you know it's out of character. Servants, be submissive to your masters with every respect, every form of respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but to those who are unreasonable. Now, you know how some servants can be. You know, while the boss is there, they're talking to him, and they're rolling their eyes, letting them know, you know, hey, I'm listening, but I'm not really listening. Or then the boss turns around and walks away, and you salute him like Hitler. That's not respect. That's disrespect. So again, and not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable. Guess what? You're going to get unreasonable bosses from time to time. And pray about it. God will take care of them. You want to see God open up a case on somebody, get some humble believer that's under authority and does this right, and God will pound on these people. But if you're constantly bucking against the tide, you're constantly chomping at the bit, you're constantly maligning the boss, guess what? It takes a lot of heat off of him. That's all it does. Gee, there may be some undeserved suffering that comes as a result of your doctrinal beliefs. But you are to absorb whatever undeserved suffering comes your way and keep your mouth shut. 1 Peter 2:18 through 20, the verse we just read, for this is grace, is literally what the verse says. This demonstrates grace. If for the sake of conscience toward God, a man bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly. For what credit is there if when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience? You did something wrong and you got caught and you get in trouble. And you say, well, I got to ride this out. Well, that's not any credit to you. That's the normal thing you would do. But when you do what is right and suffer for it, you patiently endure it. This finds favor with God. And so, again, they're going to challenge you. And again, there's a lot of principles you have to bring to bear when you're talking about this deal of working out here in the cosmos. You have your number one priority of Bible class. That's correct. And you should have very much endeavor to set your schedule up to where Bible class, you're here the maximum amount of time. Every class, if possible. That's the ideal. And that's what people ought to shoot for. And while I understand that some people from time to time have to miss because of their job, if it becomes a habit and it becomes a problem, then you need to deal with it. On the other hand, if the boss says, you got to work on Wednesday night, you can't very well just say, I got Bible class, I'm quitting. Well, you can, but that's not the right application. You don't just walk off your job because, oh, I have to miss one Bible class. No, you can always get the, well, now it's a CD, we used to say the tape. You can always, now you can go online and get it. You won't even have to leave the comfort of your own home. And you won't have to listen to it in the car, and we all know how well that always went. You're listening to tapes while you're driving around Sarasota, you got a Coke in one hand, you're giving another driver the finger in the other, and you're listening to the doctrine. And so, you know, it's best to make up, if you do make up the classes, and you should. I go to the effort to prepare. Can you imagine, like, if husbands did this to their wives? You know, they go in, they cook this elaborate dinner. They go to all this trouble. And the husband just says, oh, I think I'm just going to have a hamburger. And you got this three-course beautiful meal set on the table. How would you feel, ladies? The same way I feel when people don't think that they have to make up the classes. They think, well, you know, I've got enough doctrine. Okay. Well, you must have not needed that. I don't even know why I prepared that class. What was I thinking? So the point is, obviously, you should make that up, and you gotta be careful with this. You're going to get undeserved suffering on the job, and if it's for doctrine, make sure that, number one, it's not because you're a gossip or a busybody or a troublesome meddler. But make sure that the undeserved suffering that comes your way is truly undeserved suffering and not stuff you bring on yourself. As Peter says, don't let people suffer as a murderer or a busybody or a troublesome meddler and all of that. And clearly, believers can suffer for those reasons. So try to have a good attitude. Try to get along with your fellow employees. Treat them with respect, the same courteous respect you would like. You're going to find people out there that don't agree with you, that don't like you. Sometimes there's a whole angelic conflict thing going on where some employees just demon-possessed and they just have it in for you. Or they may not be demon-possessed at that level, but certainly the demons keep them stirred up and they hate you for no apparent reason. That's just a factor of the angelic concept. The demons know who we are. They're aware of who their enemy is. So they stir people up from time to time out there. Well, and they stir people up against you. And so that's the challenge. Try to do your job right. Have a good attitude. Stay in fellowship. And if you get out of fellowship, recognize it, rebound, and move on. And then start again. Okay, I was out of fellowship. I shouldn't have been mad at the boss. I said, okay, I got to do this right. And if you fail, and you fail publicly, apologize for it. Humble yourself and apologize for it. If you do something wrong in the job, take responsibility for your actions. This is so much of what's wrong with the workplace out there. People don't want to take responsibility for their actions. Who did this? I don't know. But it was me. Well, just tell them. Tell them it's you. If you break the copier, don't tell them somebody else did it. You know, it was some Mexican guy. He came in. He broke the copier and he left. I'd never seen him before. It was weird. You know, you liar. Well, the point is, do your job right. Treat your employees right. Treat your bosses right. Treat your fellow employees right. This is a part of our doctrine. This glorifies God. H, do your job as if you're working for the Lord, since you are. Colossians 3:23-24. If your boss is a believer, you are under the all the more principle, which means you are to strive to render service above and beyond what is expected. That's 1 Timothy 6:2. So let's say you've got a believer and he's a boss. Like that was my niche for a while. I worked when I first got on doctrine. I realized, well, I started listening to doctrine. I kept hearing I need to be face to face. Okay. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, but where I was listening in the tapes, Jack just kept railing on these people that just parroted other people's work and weren't really qualified. And I wasn't feeling too guilty, you know, because that's what I was doing. I was feeling horribly guilty, and I was like, okay, this guy's right. If I'm going to effectively teach the Bible, I've got to know certain things. And I clearly didn't. The Pundits had just shoved me into the ministry. I hung out my shingle, said I'm a pastor. And guess what? They don't mind. That's fine with them. They don't care. But that's not the way to go about it. Again, like I've stressed, there's rules about this stuff. There's rules in every area of life. I mean, do you really think for a second that you could just show up there with a John Gruden mask on and tell them you're the new coach? Yeah, I'm the coach of the Bucks. No, you're not. You can show up and say you are, but people would recognize, no, you're not. You're not him. So there's rules about all of this, but the point is, so my niche was at that time, I had to humble myself, give up a full maintenance situation, which is what I had. I was working, making plenty of money. We lived in a parsonage. All that was free. Oh, the good old days. But then I realized, okay, I'm not qualified, so I've got to humble myself. I've got to go to school. You know, and you have to stand up. I have to stand up and tell this congregation of people, look, I'm not qualified to be here. And they were all like, no, you're really great. And I was like, yeah, I know. But I'm not qualified to be here, and I've got to get qualified. I'm going to do this right if I'm going to do it. And so I had lost my job, and I had to go get another job. And for a while, I worked in this neon shop. I gassed up the tubes with neon gas, and, you know, so you could see neon when you drive down 41. Not here, but in Oklahoma. But then I saw that wasn't really working out because I was having to commute across town. And so I ended up getting a job as a salesman, which I always hated salesmen. I always thought the last thing I ever want to be is a salesman. So not only do I have to give up my church, quit my job, now I have to become a despised salesman. And so I'm out here. I'm a salesman, but I'm working for this believer, for this other positive believer in Bible class. So I'm under a whole different gun there now than everybody else is, because they're just employees, but I'm an employee with doctrine. And so I have to, it's all the more. Whatever I would do for any boss, I got to do more for this guy. And God blessed me at it, and it worked out. And you know what? That was going through seminary. We attended 5 Bible classes a week. We had a minimum of 12 hours of classroom time, plus at least that, if not double that, in study time. I'm raising a rebellious teenager. And working a full-time job, and doing all these things. And yeah, the irony is those were some of the best times in my life when I look at it. I'm just, you know, I look back and I think, well, I did my job right. I was blessed. God handled all this. We never had enough money, so we constantly had somebody living with us. You think you've been tested? Move somebody into your house so you can make ends meet. Then you'll find out what testing is like. You'll find out, oh, my God, I don't ever want to do that again. And so, but we did what we had to do. And so when I have very little tolerance for people who say, well, I just can't make it. I did what I had to do. What's wrong with you? You're no better than I am. So you do what you have to do. And if that means foregoing certain things, I'm sorry. That just means foregoing certain things. And at that time, you know, we weren't spending any money, trust me. It was just to make ends meet. So I'm there and I have to here fall under this verse, 1 Timothy 6:2, let those who have believers as their masters not be disrespectful to them because they are brethren. And that's what some people do. They would mistreat the boss simply because they knew he was some other believer in Bible class and they knew he wouldn't fire them. That's a horrible attitude. That's exactly the opposite of what this is talking about. But let them serve them all the more. Because those who partake of the benefit of your service, are believers and beloved. Teach and proclaim these principles. So again, there's the all the more principle. So Dan Brown got all the more, and he was always a good boss. I didn't have we worked there for 6 years in the closest of, you know, full time together, and we had exactly one dispute during that time, and it was because I overstepped my authority, and it caused him some embarrassment, and it was my fault. I mean, I wasn't doing it to be mean or wrong. I did what I thought was right, but it got me into trouble, and it was for overstepping my authority. And but we got that resolved and moved on, and guess what? So you can live in harmony with people all the time if you choose to, pretty much. It's not that hard. You just got to be humble and willing to do what you're supposed to do. So they're the all the more thing. J, failure to submit yourself to his authority in this area gives negative volition legitimate grounds for criticizing God and his plan. And we're supposed to be here not to bring reproach on him. Let all who are under the yoke as slaves regard their own masters as worthy of all honor, so that the name of God and our doctrine may not be spoken against. K, if you are in a position of authority over others in the business realm, now let's turn to you people that have some authority out there. Your responsibility is to recognize God will hold you accountable for how you deal with others under your command. Colossians 4:1 talks to the bosses now. So again, there's doctrine on both sides of this thing. But if you're an employee, you don't need to be worrying about what your boss is supposed to be doing. That's one of the dangers of authority and submission to authority. See, all wives know what their husbands need to be doing, and all husbands know what their wives need to be doing. And all believers know what other believers need to be doing. But all you need to do is worry about what you need to do. And that's the way it is here. Colossians 4:1, masters, grant to your slaves justice and fairness, knowing that you too have a master in heaven. And by the way, God, you know, you reap what you sow. You know, you're going to get back what you put out. L, you should treat your employees the way you want to be treated, refusing to resort to threats, bullying, and scare tactics to coerce their submission. If you're a boss, let me tell you, the point is you will have employees that want to work for you if you treat them right. And if you have employees that want to work for you, they'll do a better job if you treat them right. And as a boss, if you don't treat them right, at a certain point, they're not going to want to work for you. Now, they'll come in and they'll punch the clock and they'll get that check. But they're not doing it with their heart. They're not doing it from the soul. And if I've got to be a boss and if I've got to have employees under my authority, I want them doing their job right and I want them doing it because they want to. At a certain level, you want the kind of employee that doesn't really concern himself with money, per se. He's there because he likes the job. He wants to do it. He takes pleasure in it. I mean, we all know we work for a paycheck. We're not oblivious to that. But the point is, that's not all that the job is about, is working for a paycheck. The job is about much more than that. It's about divine good production and having a good attitude and reflecting the doctrine we teach. It's about doing the right thing. You don't leave your bosses hanging. And as masters, do the same things for them. Verse 9 here, giving up threatening, knowing that both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him. Of course, that's the whole deal, is that the master in heaven doesn't care how much juice you got down here. He's the boss, and he knows it. And he, that's not ever lost on him. All right, well, time's up, so let's stop there, and we will continue to plow through this next Sunday, or on Wednesday, pardon me. Thank you, Father, for the privilege of studying your word. May God the Holy Spirit enlighten us in Christ's name. Amen. Yeah.